Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Coming up in the hour, we've got Cheryl Atkison, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland. But right now, let's continue our conversation with John Gizzi, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. In life, I've always kind of not tried to burn a bridge whenever there's been a separation of some sort, but Adam Kinzinger made a speech on Thursday. Not only did he burn the bridge, but he threw a carton of dynamite in on the blaze, it appears. He went after the Republican Party. He slammed members for sheltering, quote, the ignorant and, quote, the racist. And that was in a fiery speech on the House floor on Thursday. Guess he won't be running Republican in the future.
I guess he's not going to get a lot of invitations to speak at Lincoln Day dinners coming up this year. Look, on a personal note, I have covered Adam Kinzinger since he ran for Congress back in 2010 for the first time. I profiled his record as a pilot for the U.S. Air Force in Iraq and Afghanistan, and his moment of heroism at home when he saved a woman from a knife-wielding assailant in Wisconsin. I might add he showed me the shirt he was wearing that night with the blood still caked on it. All right, that's all well and good. He seemed to be a young man on the rise when he was in Congress. The last time there was redistricting, he was placed in the same district with another Republican, Don Manzullo. Manzullo's record was slightly more conservative, but many thought that Adam Kinzinger was younger and had more of a future, and he emerged triumphant. That was back in 2012. Many regret their vote today in that primary, and sure enough, Adam Kinzinger's district was eliminated, and he could not run again. One thing that should be noted, this is someone who called this reporter to say how his view on the border had evolved, because during his Air National Guard duty, he was involved in the chase of a mule, that's someone who comes over the border illegally carrying drugs. And at that point, he was willing to support the tougher border security measures favored by President Trump. He also made it clear that he would not mind being Secretary of the Air Force in the Trump-run Pentagon. And now, of course, he voted for Donald Trump's impeachment and has now condemned his party in this parting shot. I think one thing should be noted about Adam Kinzinger, and that is that, in the words of Harry Truman, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. He's leaving the kitchen, Congress, January 3rd.
So the Republicans win the House of Representatives, but it hasn't been a shoe-in for Kevin McCarthy as the Speaker of the House, and he's still got some adversaries.
He certainly does. As of this writing, there are four Republican House members who have said they will not vote for Kevin McCarthy for Speaker under any circumstances. I might add, this is when the Speaker designate is meeting with them, making offers to them, and doing his utmost to get their votes. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey said if anyone deserved the speakership, it's Kevin McCarthy, who raised so much money for candidates last time that he rescued some of the very vulnerable members, and now Republicans have 222 U.S. representatives, as opposed to 213 Democrats. That means that he can't afford to lose five votes or it goes to a second ballot. There's a possibility it will go to a second ballot, and remember, the votes he needs now are 217, Democratic Congressman Donald McEachin having passed away 2 weeks. I would have to say that when the House meets on the full floor, many of those, their bellicosity notwithstanding, will realize that just a small group of Republicans voting with the Democrats could make Hakeem Jeffries the person wielding the gavel. We'll wait and see what happens. For now, Team McCarthy's working overtime.
So if this handful of Republicans manages to shoot themselves in the foot and put Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat, in as the Speaker of the House, have you seen that happen before?
I've seen it happen at the state level. Congressman Tom McClintock of California, who was a veteran state legislator before coming to Congress, reminded me that in 1994 in the California Assembly, Republicans had won a majority. And yet, because there were two Republicans who refused to back Kurt Pringle, their speaker designate, Willie Brown, Democrat from San Francisco, the political mentor of Kamala Harris, remained as speaker for months, long after his party had lost the majority. It happened in California 30 years ago, said McClintock. It can happen in Congress with a few people who won't go along with Kevin.
We've mentioned in the past that you probably have the largest Rolodex in town when it comes to journalists, and that means you get a lot of invitations to holiday parties, and you get to go to political parties, you get to go to embassy parties, and you got a scoop at an embassy party the other night.
Yes, I was at the Hungarian embassy Christmas party, and what they were saying is very simply that Hungary has finally gotten other EU countries to lower the amount of a funding freeze, and in turn, they will lift their veto on key items. This includes an aid package to Ukraine. Many people had said that it was Hungary holding out for Ukraine when the rest of the European Union wanted to support President Zelensky against the Russian invaders. It's much more complicated than that, my sources explained. Hungary had been on the verge of losing 7.5 billion euros on charges never proven that there was corruption that would misuse the money. The Hungarians retaliated by blocking the aid package to Ukraine. They also blocked a minimum global corporate tax rate, something that was backed by the Biden administration. Now, what happened was, and this is all becoming public soon, it was now approved funding for Hungary's pandemic recovery, €5.8 billion in grants that have been held up for more than a year and a half. And the outcome is a victory for Hungary and its Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, who have been arguing about this for a while. It's also a victory for Ukraine. In the end, there's always controversy, but when people talk and compromise, things work out.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You have a great holiday week. Enjoy some more parties, and we'll see you next Saturday.
I'll be celebrating in the meantime. Thank you, Rick.
A guy that makes every party in town, and I can't imagine how many he has to turn down because he just doesn't have enough time in a day to make all the holiday parties around town. It is 7:17. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer's coming up. K.T. McFarland. But next, we've got Cheryl Atkinson. First, though, we head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. Ryan Dye is there this morning.
Starting off on the outer loop of the 495 Capitol Beltway, a two-vehicle crash currently sees the through lanes shut down just before I-295. Right now, getting across the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, all traffic is being diverted into the local lanes in order to get by. Be sure to follow any and all police direction if you happen to be in the area. Over on the outer loop of the Beltway, approaching the Dulles Toll Road, a disabled motorist has been moved off onto the right side of the roadway, no longer blocking in the roadway. Now for GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 weather forecast.
Weather is looking fantastic for your Saturday. A little bit chilly, but on the dry side. Clouds will increase throughout the day and temperatures climbing up to about 45 to 46 here in the city. Outlying spots into the low 40s and the west wind, still about 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25. Tonight, freezing temperatures again with decreasing clouds and then more sunshine heading into your Sunday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
33 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 719 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson is with us each week. She is the host of Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. on ABC 7. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
You have a story, and it brings up, you know, kind of a person that's in a key role in a very important medium in this country. It's a PBM. So explain what a PBM is and how we'll find out about it tomorrow.
Well, let me first say, as I've been covering prescription drug issues over the years, people have referred to these entities called PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, and I would try to understand what they were talking about, and they would have trouble explaining them. And finally, I thought we need to do a whole story on this, which is what we're doing, because they are playing a huge role, these unseen middlemen, in our prescription drug pricing. If you get your prescription drug coverage through work, odds are your employer hires a giant company called a PBM that handles benefits, negotiates prices with insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies with the whole goal that they can make prices cheaper for everybody, make things really good. But increasingly, there are other people on the other side saying they're actually increasing drug prices. And not only that, they're resulting in sometimes delays. Maybe you can't get the medicine prescribed because they won't pay for it. They want to pay for something different. Or there could be a delay. We're going to speak to a family who believe that their mother was robbed of some valuable time because she was on hold with the PBM and the equation not getting her cancer medicine to her for some period of weeks. So this is a really serious thing, and Congress, like always, is sort of talking about whether to regulate it or do something about it, and we're going to dig through all of that on Full Measure on Sunday.
Of course, we're hearing a lot about the transition to green energy from the Biden administration, and sometimes there is the move to make something happen immediately, but not necessarily consider all of the implications. And what are you finding when it comes to this transition?
Well, I don't know if you remember, a few weeks ago, I reported from Europe on their green energy disaster. It is horrible over there because in their eagerness to go to green energy, before they had systems in place to generate enough power and deliver it, they just went ahead so fast that they now are stuck without the proper energy. The costs are too high. They're facing blackouts, all kinds of issues. Well, there are many who say we're following in the same footsteps and we're headed in that direction. So Lisa Fletcher looked into this and spoke to experts, including one who is talking about if we run into a couple of seriously, you know, dark, super cold winter days this winter in some regions, those regions face the very real possibility of blackouts, power outages, rolling intentional blackouts to try to stop, you know, a crisis. So this is huge, and this is all because, they say, this is the transition to green energy that was not well thought out. It's just we're not ready for prime time with that yet. We're relying on systems are in need of certain power that they're not able to deliver yet. So I think that's a fascinating and increasingly important story for us.
You know, with living inside the Beltway or very close to the Beltway, either side of the Beltway, we don't often think about the traditions that are up in the Amish country, which is only like 2 hours from here. And it is a fascinating journey. And you have done stories from the Amish country, and I think you have a very interesting one tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it's one of the biggest, maybe it's the biggest Amish community in the country, Lancaster, PA area. And while I was there doing other reporting on how they handled COVID and so on, I noticed that they do a lot of auctions. And I kind of dug in, and it's really hard to get access. They don't want to be on camera. They're shy about being on TV. So we got some pretty interesting access, I think, to Amish auctions. And it's a way of life in terms of how they do business. Instead of maybe if they're selling their produce, that would typically be done in a completely different way, but they auction their produce off. We went to a produce auction, super colorful, awesome. It results in great produce because people get to see and feel and bid on the produce. And if you have crappy vegetables that have worms in them, you're not going to sell your produce. But they also, I thought this was interesting, Rick, they do a lot of charitable stuff. They raise hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars for Haiti and all different kinds of charities every year. The local community, we went to one auction. There was a woman who has cancer and needed fundraising for her cancer treatment. And this small community, they all turn out. They expect to raise 100,000 or hundreds of thousands of dollars just at this one auction. They're super generous. So they're all expected to bring something, and they're all expected to buy something. There may be a box of tomatoes that's worth, you know, a couple of bucks, but they may bid $50, $100 to help the person to raise money for the charity. But it's just, I think, a fascinating glimpse into a different way of doing things.
That's really neat. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 with Cheryl Atkison on Full Measure. And I want to mention once again your store, because at CherylAtkison.com, you've got the Think for Yourself line of everything from holiday ornaments to sweatshirts to T-shirts to Christmas stockings. And it is all for a good cause, and it is to support independent journalism. So anybody that's in need of a last-minute holiday gift idea, Christmas, Hanukkah coming up this week, great idea at CherylAtkison.com. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. Happy holidays, everybody.
7:25, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is in the wings, and we're going to talk about those Twitter files that keep coming out, the documents from Elon Musk, and also the very latest on the Russian attack on Ukraine and some of the U.S. Aid that is headed that way. That's all coming up next. Then we got KT McFarland, too. So stay with us on the Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
The Saturday morning update continues. We're at 7:35, and we are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and also he is the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning. Always great to have you with us.
Morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
Announcement earlier in the week, and it's sort of in response to some of the stories we've been talking about over the year. Russia had announced that they had hypersonic missiles. What did the U.S. Air Force announce this week?
Well, the Air Force has announced that they are now funding a new attack, basically a high-value program designed to create our own version of hypersonic missiles, hypersonic attack cruise missile, HACM, scramjet-powered hypersonic air-launched cruise missile. F-15s, which are one of the most prevalent tactical fighters we have, will be the carrier. It can be expanded to other airframes. But, yeah, it's a response, and it's a detailed and very large contract with Raytheon, I believe, to do this, to get this together. And the good news is, Rick, that these things are very effective. They can get you a lot of the current class of defensive countermeasures very effectively. So this is a good investment in technology for the United States, and something that is really arguably long overdue.
Well, Russia rained down scores of missiles on Ukraine's power grid on Friday.
Right.
Three people were killed at least. Damage to 9 energy facilities, and that's forced blackouts across Ukraine. So we're sending in additional aid and weaponry. Tell us what now.
So the next thing we're sending is Patriot missiles. These are obviously the big strategic systems that we use to take down, you know, missiles, missile on missile countermeasures, and notably that to the first part of our conversation, Rick, hypersonic missiles will probably not be stopped by Patriots. That's part of the reason that you see this rush to hypersonic weapons, because a lot of the current countermeasures, such as the Patriot missiles, would not necessarily be effective in stopping it. With that said, the current deployment of these systems is designed to counter what you just mentioned, constant and repeated attacks by the Russians on not only power plants, but distribution centers, getting the energy out to the people. It's no doubt that the strategy for the Russians is to make the lives of Ukrainians miserable, and use that as a reminder to Europe of how unpleasant it is to be cold and unable to essentially live lives normally. And that's why you see this overwhelming attack on the infrastructure, the power grid of Ukraine by the Russians.
I want to turn to the release of documents from Elon Musk at Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
And there has just been a flood of documents, and I wish he'd taken it a little bit slower, only because there's been so much to come out that it vaporizes within 24 to 36 hours, because he has released more documents that even supersede the importance of the ones he just put out the day before. So
right.
The latest ones involved one of our agencies here in Washington.
One we've talked about often, and our audience has heard us described as less than stellar lately, and that's the FBI. Basically, the Dump 6 shows the evidence of the FBI having continuous contact, pervasive contact with the FBI, to not only provide information regarding threat. The FBI did not just provide threat. They actually started providing information on private sector entities that includes U.S. citizens who they felt, without any evidence, were potentially influence actors from a foreign source. So this is to say, Rick, without our knowledge, some of us were being portrayed by a federal bureaucracy as potential agents of influence by a foreign country. And I think that's what's coming next in the specifics. The other thing here, too, that I think people have missed on this latest dump, Twitter was providing all sorts of data on users. So, you know, when you sign the terms of agreement, I don't know if it was clear, but and I don't think it was in there. You were basically opening the door to have these federal agencies who are getting all this data. And I can tell you for a fact that the FBI should not be having any information on you or I or anyone else unless there's essentially some evidence of a crime of some note. The idea that you're going to just go out there and grab people's data, use it for your own internal purposes, is illegal. So I know that Congress is debating this whole First Amendment thing, because the first part of the conversation regarding this issue was the First Amendment, the FBI going out trying to curtail and remove people for exercising their free speech. And then in the second case is the FBI retaining data. Rick, I ran operations in the United States where we had to be very careful about any retention of any U.S. citizens' information for more than 30 days, even if we inadvertently picked it up. There's a whole thing I testified on this years ago. So the idea that FBI now is just coming in and willy-nilly telling the Twitter to take people off to violate the First Amendment, and on top of that take data, is Orwellian and, dare I say, Soviet-like in character. And this is something that people need to be paying, to your point, paying a lot of attention to.
Quite a story in the British publication, of course, the Daily Mail. This was updated overnight. The headline, Twittergate deepens. FBI refuses to reveal how many social media firms it is secretly influencing amid accusations it broke the law by pushing Twitter to remove accounts and hand over user location details that revealed in the new trove, that from the Daily Mail in the UK. And it says, in one email last month, the FBI asked Twitter to suspend actor Billy Baldwin.
Although, you know, those actors are very dangerous.
There's a threat to America and the world.
Ugh. Yeah, man. I mean, those actors, they are the largest threat to the foundation of society. I'm telling you right now. I know a few, so just saying.
I'm sure John Voight's on the list there somewhere, too.
Yes.
It says, also listed in the ban request were satire accounts and right-wing commentary.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
That's reporting in the Daily Mail, so...
Well, but I tend to believe everything I've read and talked to other folks. It's absolutely correct. And again, Rick, I don't think people understand how fully compromised the FBI is in violating people's rights, especially First Amendment. And second, then, using data they should not have for purposes of launching real-world investigations. This is Soviet-level wrongdoing. I use that term often, but I've had to use it often over the past 5 years because we have so many elements of the federal government that have become federal, have become Soviet bureaus, which are more focused on stopping stopping its citizens from expressing themselves rather than protecting the citizens from foreign threat. It's a very dangerous thing.
So you mean you're not going to sign a letter with 50 of your colleagues saying that the Daily Mail is Russian disinformation?
Oh, my, yes. Well, more to come on that. I've been contacted by Congress. There's going to be some hearings, and I might be able to go in there and talk about the counterpoint of that whole 51 intelligence officer thing. Anyone who was in the list, Rick, they should, in my judgment, never be permitted anywhere near the federal government or any communications again. Those folks are completely compromised, and I hope the American people see that for what it is now.
Why do I think that a Democratic investigative committee would not call Tony Schaefer to testify?
Well, the Republicans will soon be in charge, so we'll see how that rolls. But yes, it would never. A Tony Schaefer would never show up in front of a Democrat thing. But to kind of summarize this, I hope people will, to your point, pay attention past the 24-hour news cycle and actually track what's going on. Because, as you just said, Rick, the FBI will not disclose who else they're talking to, which means this was pervasive, extensive, and dare I say, still ongoing, and it should not be ongoing. So,
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action podcast. What's coming up this week?
So, part two of our strategy discussions regarding China. We had Major General John Kim, former Commandant of the War College, and our own distinguished fellow Gordon Chang, talking about the economic challenges that China faces and how that's going to impact, or how our strategy regarding dealing with China should impact on that very issue. So I think people would learn a lot, and it's done in such a way that to talk to people as they're adults without talking down to them. I think so. People should jump in and check it out.
Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
7:45 Saturday morning update. KT McFarland coming up next, but first, Brian Dye is in the WML Traffic Center.
Starting off on the outer loop of the Capitol Beltway, an earlier crash reported before I-295 over on the Maryland side has completely cleared from the roadway. Right now, all travel lanes getting across the Woodrow Wilson Bridge are open and available to you. Over on the outer loop of the Beltway in the Silver Spring area, a disabled motorist has been reported blocking one right acceleration lane just after University Boulevard. Right now, no delays there. Traffic is getting by. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 weather forecast.
Weather is looking fantastic for your Saturday. A little bit chilly, but on the dry side. Clouds will increase throughout the day and temperatures climbing up to about 45 to 46 here in the city. Outlying spots into the low 40s, and the west wind still about 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25. Tonight, freezing temperatures again with decreasing clouds and then more sunshine heading into your Sunday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
33 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:46 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us this morning. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, great to have you with us this morning.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. First off, the southern border, we've been talking about it for a couple of years. You haven't heard much of anything at MSNBC or CNN until this week. Here's Anderson Cooper.
It's extraordinary how collapsed our immigration system is, and there's no resolution in sight here.
Jose Diaz-Balart is at MSNBC.
They're being kidnapped, starved, raped, extorted. That's just in Mexico. I'm just wondering, where is the urgency here? Where is the outrage?
For him to ask that question after MSNBC and CNN have ignored the southern border for the 2 years of the Biden administration. Such hypocrisy, KT.
Yeah, but what do you expect? Washington is full of people who are hypocrites. That I'm not surprised at. You know, in a lot of ways, that southern border has been so bad for so long that it's almost become boring. And MSNBC and CNN and the mainstream media, probably even social media, is now going to start paying attention to it because it's no longer boring. It's now pretty much in your face because it's affecting the entire country. And for some inexplicable reason, the Biden administration and the Democrats in Congress, they continue to say, no crisis, everything's under control, new plan right around the corner. But they've been saying those lies for so long, well, maybe they'd even come to believe it. I mean, not only have they gaslighted the country, but they've gaslighted themselves. And I think the response that you're seeing, the turnaround of mainstream media starting to pay a little bit of attention to it, is because it is now such a huge crisis in so many parts of the country that it can't be ignored. I mean, take the fentanyl part of it, just the fentanyl part. The Chinese have been pushing fentanyl across that open southern border. It is now the leading cause of death in young adults. It's the leading cause of death in teenagers. We now lose more people each year than during the entire course of the Vietnam War. And yet it somehow hasn't gotten anybody's attention till right about now. The American heartland, which is where it's affected the most, and the decaying cities, they're devastated. This year, as people sit down for Christmas, there are going to be 50,000 families in America who are going to not have somebody at that Christmas table because that kid died. And yet the Biden administration would be so easy to do something. I mean, extend Trump's remain in Mexico, put more agents on the border, build a wall, but they don't want to do it. Politics, maybe, because they don't care about the pain they're causing families all across the country because they don't see it themselves. Look, it's the biggest economic, humanitarian, and national security crisis we face. I'm glad some people are finally waking up to it. But it's a crisis that's been long in the making. And again, the fix is easy. The problem with the fix is they just don't want to have to say, well, this is what Trump did. We're going to do just the opposite, because, in fact, the fix is what Trump did. Have them remain in Mexico. Have more agents at the border. Probably even build a wall. Put some order into this. You know, I'm a New Yorker, and our Mayor Adams has just requested $1 billion per year to deal with the 30,000 migrants who have come into New York. How many millions of migrants have come across the country with no visible means of support? How many billions is that going to cost the United States at a time when our economy, by all estimates, 97% of all, you know, financial people and economists and experts, they all say we're going to go into a recession. Meanwhile, we've got this economic crisis, a humanitarian crisis. And I think fentanyl deaths, I think that's a national security crisis. When you kill 50,000 Americans, that somebody's threatening our country.
It is mind-boggling to me how Mayorkas continues to say the border is secure. Karine Jean-Pierre continues to say the border is secure. It obviously is not. It is completely out of control. And President Biden says, well, there's more important things to worry about. It is mind-boggling to me. And maybe now that Anderson Cooper and the folks over at MSNBC also wake up a little bit, maybe America will wake up and maybe the administration will wake up. I don't know. It's unbelievable. And especially when you lay out those numbers of people who are dying and young people who are dying, and the administration is like, everything's fine.
You know, it is the leading cause of death among adults 18 through 45, more than COVID, more than cancer, more than heart disease, more than car accident, more than anything. The only thing I can hope for is that the new Republicans coming into the House of Representatives just keep your spine and keep tough. And if somebody says, well, there's no problem, you know what, use your constitutional power and don't give this guy another nickel. You know, vote no. And all the people in the Senate and all the people saying, oh, it would be so terrible if we don't have a budget extension, if we don't. No, it won't. You know, let's just see. We've never tried it. Let's just see it. In the Reagan years, in the Nixon years, 20, 30 years ago, we didn't pass budgets. The world didn't fall apart. The people who wanted to stand firm on their positions, they stood firm on them. But now it just seems that, okay, so Mayorkas, well, maybe we should impeach him. No, just cut off his money. Just cut it off. Just don't have a budget for it. If they can't do their job, don't give them a budget. Don't vote for a budget. And then just see what happens. See how quickly they come around. Right now, I think 50,000 fentanyl deaths a year, that's something worth paying attention to.
Let's do a 180. You have a way around the holidays, the various holidays of the year when you're on with us, you can come up with a very unique and a very warm message. And it is the holiday season, Christmas around the corner. Your reflections on this holiday season?
Well, look, Americans are on the move this week, right? Planes, trains, automobiles, they're going to be long ways. Their winter storms are coming across much of the country. So everybody's going to have a lot of downtime. And even when they get to where they're going or their family comes home to them, there's going to be a lot of people on their screens, right? I mean, I've got 9 grandchildren. I know what they spend most of their time doing. They spend most of their time, I don't know, mindless conversations with their pals. People on the plane, if you ever watch but screens what people are doing, they're playing solitaire. Okay, so I have another idea. Here's what you can do. Charles Dickens' The Christmas Carol. It's a modest proposal. Look, the book, the audiobook, the dozens of downloadable movies, TV, they're all free. Just do that during your downtime, either at home or when you're trying to travel. Watch it, listen to it, and see if there isn't something you can draw for your own life. For those who may not know the story, let me give you a brief recap. So it takes place in Victorian England in the 1850s. And there's a man, an old guy, Scrooge, and he's all by himself. He's an accountant of some sort. He's a real cheapskate. I mean, the ultimate cheapskate. He's really rich. But every time he's reproached, can you give money for the poor? Will you do this? No, I won't do this. He has one lovely, nice guy employee, a clerk. And he doesn't even want to give the clerk the day off for Christmas. So the clerk is poor, has a wife, a bunch of kids, including a crippled little boy. That's the setting for it. So one night, right before Christmas, Scrooge goes to bed, and he's visited by the ghost of his former partner, dead partner, Jacob Marley. And Jacob Marley had been just as bad as Scrooge in life. And Jacob Marley is now dead. And the ghost of Marley appears to Scrooge, as if in a dream, but actually real. And Marley is saying to him, I am in hell, and look at the chains I carry around. I'm miserable. Life is horrible in the afterlife. I'm here to warn you that this is going to be you in a few years if you don't change. And I'm going to have 3 ghosts are going to visit you, Scrooge, in the course of the night, and you're going to see the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. So Scrooge thinks this is crazy, goes back to sleep, but then the 3 ghosts come. The ghost of Christmas past shows Scrooge and all the things that led up to making Scrooge the jerk he is today. Then Christmas present, and he sees all the places where people are celebrating. People with nothing are celebrating. And then finally the ghost of Christmas future shows what happens to that clerk and his crippled son. The boy dies. Everybody, Scrooge is, I mean, it's horrible the future he's going to be facing. So Scrooge realizes that this is not the life he wants to lead, and he is redeemed. And so Christmas morning comes up, and he gets a goose, and he takes it over to the poor guy's family, and he goes to his relatives, and he just becomes a very different man. Merry Christmas to all. What it did was not only provide an interesting story, but it ushered in a reform wave in Britain during the height of the Industrial Revolution, where Britain had become cynical and had massive amounts of poor people and orphans on the street. It changed Britain. It saved Christmas, but it changed the British Empire and thereby the world. I think we need a spiritual awakening in America. And I think Christmas is a darn good place to start. And I think The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens is your first step.
KT, when you mentioned people on airplanes and things with their iPads and whatever the games they're playing, I'm just cracking up because I sat next to a guy for 2.5 hours playing the same game the whole trip. It's a wonderful message.
He could have spent that 2.5 hours in a much better way, watching Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Wonderful message from KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. It makes a great holiday gift idea. KT, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. 7:59, Saturday morning update. That's it for us. Garden Sense is coming up at 1 this afternoon.